Welcome to another of our NPR Illinois Forum series, Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. That series produced by NPR Illinois and also supported by AARP. I'm Sean Crawford, the NPR Illinois News Director and host of a show and a podcast called State Week, another called Statewide. We're in Chicago tonight at the Union League Club, and we're glad you could come out this evening. And also, we welcome to those listening on the air and through social media. We're traveling across Illinois. We've been doing that for the last few months. This is our 11th forum that we've held through in all corners of the state, hearing how voters like yourselves feel about the various issues that are facing Illinois. We've heard concerns over education, healthcare, infrastructure, the state's budget, and the tax burden, and it's clear most residents don't like the way things are going. Tonight we want to hear from you, so if you have some issues you'd like to address or some comments to make, if you could fill out one of our cards, and we will ask you to step to the microphone later and ask those questions. We've asked you to submit those, and we have some people in the back who will be glad to help you out with that. And we also have some people listening in two other locations tonight. We hope to hear from them also. We have a great panel as well that will help guide the discussion. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I'm going to start right here next to me, and we'll just go down the line.
Great. Thank you, Sean. Good evening, everyone. My name is A.J. Wilhelmy. I'm the president and CEO of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association, and I'm a lifelong resident of Illinois, born and raised in Joliet, still live in Joliet with my wife and three daughters.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Z. Scott. I'm the president of Chicago State University. I moved to Chicago when I was in eighth grade and have been a resident ever since. I recently joined Chicago State as its 12th permanent president, and happy to be here.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for being here. I am Joe Mancino. I serve as mayor of the village of Hawthorne Woods in Lake County, Illinois. I am also the chairman of the executive board of the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. We are a council of government that count members 275 cities and municipalities throughout the collar counties. I've lived in Illinois for 42 years with my wife and have two adult children. Very happy to be here this evening.
Good evening. I'm Rosanna Marcus. I'm the state president of AARP Illinois. Been in that position for 3 years. I am a lifelong Chicagoan, a lifelong Illinoisan. I love this state, I love the city, but I'm very deeply worried about what is going on here.
And I'm Edwin Eisendrath. I'm the CEO of the Chicago Sun-Times. I grew up next to Wrigley Field, and I too am worried about what's going on here.
All right, we've got a great panel. We're going to hear from all of them tonight and talk about some of the issues that are facing the state of Illinois. I did want to mention as well, you heard from Rosanna there, AARP, as you heard at the beginning of the show, a financial supporter of our forums. To get it started, I'm going to go ahead and go out into the cards that we've already seen that have been filled out here. And if we can have, Carolyn, I think it's Ediger, I hope that's right. Carolyn, if you mind stepping to the back of the room and ask your question. And while she gets there, as I mentioned before, we have some people listening in different locations tonight. Feel free to submit your questions, and we'd like to hear from you, hear what's on your mind this evening. Our panel will try their best to answer those for you. Carolyn, go right ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you. My question is about the past and how we got to this day with our problems in Illinois. We are a very wealthy state, and we should not be in this state of affairs. I remember when Judy Barr Topinka was our Illinois comptroller, and I remember when she pleaded with the state Illinois legislator to please not let the tax rate lapse from, I think it was 4.95 back to 3.75, which it is now. And when it was at that higher rate, we were paying our bills and gradually paying down our debt. I don't understand why the legislature, and especially the Democrats who control have a majority in the state legislature, allowed this to happen. I talked to my representative, I live out in Edgewater, and I said, why did you go along with that? What they told me was, because we were, the governor, Rauner, asked us to do that. And I don't understand why the Democrats, and not only my representatives and senator allowed that to happen, but why the legislators from the rest of Illinois went along with that idea. Can somebody explain that to me?
We'll see if anyone on our panel wants to take that question right off the
bat. I can take a crack at part of your question. I think it's a very good question, Carolyn. You said, how did we get here? And coming from the municipal world, the mayors, we're very pragmatic, and we look at things from the simplest state. And the reason we are here, it has been since 1998 that the state's revenues have matched our expenditures, that they've even been close. It's been since that time, and revenues have grown at one rate, and expenditures have grown at a greater rate, basically 4.3% on revenues and 4.9% on expenditures. So it's a real easy thing to see, especially from a mayoral, from a municipal perspective, to see that if you have a stack of bills that are this high and a stack of money that is that high, it's never going to work out well for you. And you take that period of time from 1998 to 2018, and those two streams, that revenue grows one rate and those expenditures grow at another rate, it creates that delta, and it just gets larger and larger and larger. Primarily, that's how we've gotten here. Our revenues have not matched up to our expenditures.
That's Mayor Mancino. Basically, you're saying that the spending has outpaced revenue. Former Senator A.J. Wilhelmy, now with the Hospital Association here in the state of Illinois, but you were in the legislature for a long time. You helped put budgets together. What was going on?
I think you raise a really important question, and I appreciate the mayor's explanation in terms of the revenue base compared to the expenditures of the state of Illinois. And when you look back at the 2011 tax increase that raised the individual tax rate to 5%, that was sunset and allowed to roll back essentially to that 3.75% starting in 2015. And then in a bipartisan manner, Democrats and Republicans in the legislature coming together, that tax rate was increased in July of 2017 to 4.95% where it is today. And what we did see over the course of the time in which that 5% tax rate was in effect was the budget stabilizing and the backlog of bills coming down and seeing a little bit more stability and predictability. And I think when you look at employers and organizations, including hospitals and health systems across the state, when you ask business leaders, what do you look for the most in the state of Illinois and really in any government body? They want predictability, they want stability, and they look to our leaders to have that predictability and stability with the state budget. Now, over my time in the state Senate for 7 years, I was involved in some of that budget making process, and it is difficult, it is challenging, because we know that you have to have enough revenues, you have to have adequate revenues to support the programs and services that people rely on, including access to quality healthcare services. So it's a challenging exercise, but I was encouraged in July of 2017 when Democrats and Republicans came together to pass a budget. We saw that again this past May when they enacted a budget. I know there's a question about whether there's a structural deficit, but we need more of those bipartisan solutions. And revenue, yes, has to be part of the discussion.
Anyone else?
Maybe I could just try a different way to answer your question. Illinois is in some ways the most American state. And our people, our politicians, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are mostly moderate in Illinois, mostly, and practical. So how do we end up in this mess? We have, across our country, a democracy problem. We really do. And for generations, people have run for office assuming that our democracy is strong and will withstand any playing on the edges. And people have done it, and they've vilified each other, and they've vilified government, which is, after all, the enterprise we're in together, and they have played the edges and scared everybody to death. We are seeing this backed out at every level, not just in the budget in Illinois. And I think we need a recommitment, as we had for the first 100 and some years of our country, where people you elect care about the democracy first and think about what we have to do to make that successful. And only if that's first will we have the courage to make the kinds of decisions we have to make, which, after all, are not that hard, right?
Thank you. That's Edwin Eisendrath, Chicago Sun-Times CEO. Let me, we'll be continuing tonight by hearing from some different folks here in the audience, but I do want to throw a couple of questions to the panel. One of them, when we start talking about the state budget, we hear a lot about overspending, and yet we've seen some areas of the budget take some real hits in the last few years. One of those was higher education. Absolutely. President Z. Scott from Chicago State University is here, and I don't think I can name another university that took more of a blow during the budget impasse, especially, than Chicago State. Can you explain what happened there and where things are today?
Thank you. Chicago State, like most public universities, went a total of 2 years without a budget. And when the budget was finally passed by the legislature, it came late in the fiscal year, almost at a time when it was difficult for us to even take advantage of it. I've been the president for about 3 months, but during that three-month time period, I have learned about the devastating impact that the lack of a budget had on Chicago State. We're the traditional student there at Chicago State, 85% of our students qualify for financial aid, which means that many of them are coming from zip codes that are impacted by poverty. I mean, it is everything that we want education to be. We want students who have the opportunity to access their opportunity to move into the middle class and improve the lives of their families. But at Chicago State, you know, with that student population, we had to declare as a result of not having any access to capital and funds, declare fiscal exigency. And what that meant is that the university almost closed its doors and had to lay off half of our administration and staff. And that is a difficult lift to recover from. I spend some days reminding my faculty and students and staff that, you know, we hope that those circumstances are in the rear window, and that we need to use history to really inform how we make decisions and how we measure the funds that we do have now received from the state. And that means that we are going to be strong fiscal stewards. But even in the wake of a new budget, we still, our funding and revenue has not returned to where it was before the state had no budget, so that we are still climbing up from that time. And what you've seen, and Illinois is no exception, many public institutions in many other states are staring down the same barrel, and that is that the state has continued to lower its investment in higher education. And how has that impacted not only Chicago State, but Illinois generally? We have seen what has been an incredible migration of our students from Illinois to neighboring states. Other states are coming after our students in a way, and our talent in a way that is fierce. The competition for students is fierce, and the competition to keep students is fierce. So I think that one thing that we have to consider as a state is, do we once again invest in our students and invest in them staying in Illinois and becoming part of our ecosystem? One thing that's interesting about Chicago State students is that we graduate close to 1,000 students each year, and despite fiscal exigency, we have graduated close to 5,000 students in the last 5 years. The majority of those students stay in Chicago. So unlike many of our public institutions, we are one of the institutions that makes a significant contribution to a diverse workforce to the city of Chicago and the surrounding areas. And I think that is one of the places where we stand out. But to emphasize the lack of a budget, and our students protested, our faculty members got on buses to really, you know, emphasize the devastating impact that the lack of a budget had on them and our community. So there are many impacts of the budget that are talked about daily, and that includes social services. But the impact on higher education is one that we will be talking about for years to come.
Okay. And we will continue with our panel here in just a moment. I'm going to call, I hope I have the first name right. I'll only go with the first name. Neural could step up to the microphone, and he has a question like to ask the panel. Go right ahead.
Thank you for being here. My question is simple but hard to answer, which is how can the state honor its obligation to retirees, public sector retirees, and still say fiscally sustainable, both current retirees and future ones? Thanks.
Okay. Anybody have the answer for that one? We can. The pension issue certainly is a big one for the state of Illinois. It's a huge albatross that hangs over anybody, whether they're a state lawmaker or governor. They've tried some things in the past. Some things have been struck down by courts. So where do we stand when it comes to protecting the pension obligations, but also getting the state's burden a little bit less?
Yeah, well, I'll certainly say that is a very difficult question to answer, but let me say this to that. You know, initially in the budget impasse of a couple of years ago, there was a bit of a movement to try and do a quick fix to some of the fiscal problems by taxing retirement income. And we successfully fought, and our members successfully fought that off. But I am saying this here to say, you know, there, I don't know what the fix is, but it is going to be a complicated fix. There is going to have to be a lot of give and take on all sides around all issues. And it's going to be hard, but we're going to have to be thoughtful about it. But there is no quick fix. Certainly on the pension, you know, there are state constitutional questions that complicate it. But whatever the answer is going to be, it has to be part of a bigger whole. In terms of fixing our fiscal problems. It can't just be at the expense of pensioners. It can't be at the expense of retirees. It's got to be part of a bigger picture. But I don't have the answer to just the pension piece of it, but it has to be part of a bigger, painful set of fixes that, you know, John mentioned our survey results. Among other things, there was a clear recognition that fixing these long-term problems is going to require and inflict a lot of pain on a lot of people, which is part of what the anger is about. And the longer we wait, the more it's going to hurt. But again, you know, it's part of a bigger piece. There will almost undoubtedly be pain. No one is going to come out of this happy about what are the necessary actions that we're going to need to take to get this state on its way to long-term fiscal health, but we got to get started talking about it and talking about the trade-offs that have to be made.
That's a great question and a great answer. There are a lot of things that need to be done to solve the pension issue. And approaching it from a single solution is just never going to work. There are many things that are going to have to happen on both sides of the formula. For example, the Mayor's Caucus and the Illinois Municipal League, many of the Council of Governments at the municipal level, we have been pushing the legislative, the General Assembly very, very hard because that pension crisis weighs heavily on municipal governments. And municipal governments, in my opinion, are the biggest bang for the buck. We deliver the most services directly to our constituents, and we hear from you on a regular basis. We see you at the grocery store. So we're very accountable to our residents. We are pushing the General Assembly to start looking at smart solutions. There is no silver bullet. There will be steps such as consolidating the public safety pensions. There are roughly 700 different public safety pension systems in the state of Illinois for firemen and police and all of our public safety organizations. It's almost 700 of them. Each one has a separate board like this that makes decisions. They invest in different channels for their money. The municipalities, we're pushing very hard. Let's at least take a step to consolidate those and start realizing not only the cost savings of all these various channels that each municipality goes through, but also the benefit of pooling some of these dollars and aiming them in the right direction together so that their returns can be realized and be greater. So in my opinion, it's going to be a lot of small steps, but as Rosanna stated, we are all going to have to bleed just a little bit. I don't think anybody, in my opinion, will be unscathed for us to walk out of this forest that we wandered into, and it's not going to happen overnight. I don't think it'll happen in 10 years. I think best case scenario, we're looking at 15 or 20 years to start seeing the light. That's my opinion, in order to do it to not impact our residents so strongly. We're gonna have to phase in the changes, but we're all going to have to give a little bit.
Does anybody think this is unsolvable? No, right? So you heard some potential answers here. You heard everybody needs to give a little. We have an $820 billion GDP in Illinois, right? We can solve this problem. Now for a shameless plug, Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker will be at the Sun-Times editorial board next Tuesday morning. We will broadcast that, and you can hear them answer this question. I do think I used to be a politician. I used to be an elected official and spent time answering the questions, as you heard. And it's enormously important that people who are in office or running for office provide answers like you did. This is a possible solution, right? But it's up to the citizens to say to everybody, we need all to look each other in the eye and say, we can make a deal on this that we can all live with. At the end of the day, I hope we're not at the place where everybody's unhappy that we've solved the problem, but that everybody cheers that we've solved the problem, even if it's cost us a little bit to put our kids and their kids on a better footing than they are today.
And I look forward to hearing how they're going to solve that next Tuesday. We'll listen for that one. When we talk about state budgeting, we hear about the pensions a lot, and it's a huge obligation that the state has, and it's certainly there every single year when you look at the state budget and where the money is going. We were talking just a little bit before we began the program about something that people may not realize. I may not realize that the role that Medicaid plays in the state's budgets. It's about 25% of the overall population receives Medicaid services. So that number has grown quite a bit through the years. And let me turn to A.J. Wilhelmy. What are people missing about Medicaid when it comes to, you know, how the state pays for this type of service?
Yeah, it's a great question, Sean. And when you look at Medicaid and how the Medicaid program works, it's a joint partnership between the federal government and the states. And so for every dollar that Illinois spends on Medicaid, on services, healthcare services for Medicaid beneficiaries, it draws down a federal match of that same equal dollar. So when you cut a dollar of Medicaid, you're leaving a dollar of federal Medicaid revenue on the table. So it's not the most efficient place to make cuts. And yet, having said that, over the last 7-8 years, we've seen about $1 billion in Medicaid cuts to hospitals, on top of about $5 billion in federal Medicare cuts to Illinois hospitals in that same period of time since 2010. So what we're trying to do at the association, working with our hospitals and elected officials, is to make sure that we share that information, that we educate our elected officials, policymakers, on the challenges when you cut Medicaid funding and leaving that federal funding on the table, and also the impact that has on access to quality health care and direct patient care, whether that's someone who's a child in the state, someone middle-aged, or our elderly population that are covered by both Medicare and Medicaid. We call those dually eligible. We have to be very careful before we go down the path of further cutting Medicaid and Medicare at the federal level without doing real harm to patients. And real quickly on the pension issue, next year's budget, I heard this from a legislator last week, 26% of the state GRF budget will be dedicated to the pensions. So when you look at the spending side of the state budget, next year 26% will be to pay the pension obligations of the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's clearly unsustainable. There's a 50-year ramp to get to the 90% funding level for our state pension systems. We have five in the state of Illinois. That was put in place by the legislature and Governor Edgar in 1995. So one option is, okay, that's a 50-year ramp to get to 90% funding. Maybe that needs to be revisited. But these are some of the creative solutions that I know our legislators are thinking about. I can tell you firsthand that legislators on both sides of the aisle want to get to a solution on our pension, the significant underfunding of our pension systems. Mm-hmm. And what I would say on behalf of hospitals and health systems and the patients that our members serve, got to be very careful when we go down the path of further cutting Medicaid.
And let's keep in mind on the pensions too, with the reason we're in such bad shape with those is years, and I'm talking decades and decades of underfunding the pension systems. The bill comes due at some point. This just shows you how hard it is, I think, it seems like it's simple arithmetic to solve the state's budget problems. We've heard about education, we've heard about health care for the poor, we've heard about the pension debt. Where do you make the cuts? You could say, well, pensions, that makes a lot of sense. Well, those are retirement benefits you know, teachers and state workers and others have counted on for years. Plus, there are some limitations on what you can actually do. Dave Cohn from Chicago, if Dave could step to the microphone. And again, we're at the Union League Club. This is our Illinois Issues Seeking Solutions Election 2018 Forum, the latest one. In fact, our last one of the year. Dave, go right ahead.
Thank you very much. The discussion about Illinois' fiscal problems inevitably gets back to some of the issues that have been raised here, including the pension inviolability clause of our Constitution that has caused, it has kind of handcuffed the General Assembly's ability to address this. And we have one gubernatorial candidate who's calling for a graduated or progressive income tax, and both of those approaches to solving our problems or seeking solutions would require a constitutional amendment. My question for the panel is, for any of the panelists, what do you think is the desirability of and the likelihood of Illinois citizens approving constitutional amendments to do either of those things, to either permit for a graduated or progressive income tax, not a flat tax, or amending the pension inviolability clause to allow for adjustments in public pension systems? Do you think that either of those things should or will occur?
Let me start to answer that question, David. So the survey that we did also asked our voters asked some questions around their tolerance for certain solutions. And there were very divided opinions about a lot of them on both the revenue and on the service and program funding cuts. But there were on the revenue side at least three potential fixes that got majority support in our survey. One of those was to move to a graduated income tax in Illinois. The other two, by the way, were expanding legalized gambling and expanding the sales tax to cover certain services. But just to focus on that part of it, there is, at least our survey would tell us, some tolerance. Again, there's a recognition there's going to have to be multiple and multifaceted fixes to address our long-term problems, but there is some tolerance for at least the graduated income tax. So, you know, I'm going to say to the extent that our elected officials need to know that they have some support, that they needn't fear, because let me just get to this part of, you know, part of what this survey is telling us is that voters know, you know, whatever all the noise is, whatever all the negative ads and the blame game and the partisan politics, they know there is a big problem out there. And because they are not hearing our elected officials and candidates talking about these problems, they have very low confidence in our ability to tackle these problems. They're not asking for overnight fixes. They know it's going to be hard. They're starting to express what they would be willing to tolerate, but they want to hear our elected officials and our candidates talking about and starting to wrestle some of these issues to the ground. And if they start to do that, I think this survey tells us that voters would come around and listen to thoughtful solutions that may indeed require some kind of voter approval.
Anyone else?
That's a great question. I think the biggest challenge to that is actually opening up the referendum and getting into a constitutional convention. That is going to be quite a challenge. I think everybody in this room can attest that we are quite a partisan, there's a partisan political landscape in Illinois, which is part of the problem, in my opinion. But when you talk about opening up a state constitution, that is a big, big move, and that is going to be the biggest challenge. But I think, as Rosanna mentioned, I think all of you folks in this audience have already made the step by even being here this evening. Until our elected officials start hearing directly from us exactly what the problem is and that what we want them to address, they are not going to do it. It's been years. I've been here 42 years. I don't see it happen until we as residents, we as voters, get right involved and tell them what we think. It won't happen. And that includes opening up a constitutional convention and doing some of the suggestions that our question suggests.
Quickly, you know, it's interesting, the process on amending the Constitution starts in the legislature. So you have to have three-fifths of the Senate, three-fifths of the House approve putting that question on the ballot. And then the people, all of us, we get to decide. And it has to pass the constitutional muster from the general population. So it's very interesting. That process starts with 3/5 vote, and to the mayor's point, you know, politics plays a role. There are different political philosophies with respect to taxation and spending. And so the first question is, would it clear the House and Senate? And then it would be able to go to the voters. And that question is very interesting. How would we decide on the fate of a graduating income tax? And how would we decide on the fate of amending the pension clause that was referenced?
And Mayor, I'm assuming that you hear from people in your area who often say that I already pay too much in taxes, property taxes, for example. You know, that is that a big issue when it comes to the state trying to also, you know, raise more revenue?
In our neck of the woods, property taxes certainly are probably the number one issue that residents come to me and my peers about property taxes. I think our residents are becoming more informed as to what property taxes really are. Years ago, I'd get a lot of questions about, why are you raising my property taxes? Well, guess what? It's not the municipality doing it. If you look at your tax bill, 70% of your tax bill goes to the local school systems, which is great. We all want to finance schools for all the good reasons that good schools bring. But you cannot talk about a property taxes without talking, you cannot talk about property taxes without talking about education funding. And what do I mean by that? You look at your tax bill, 70% of that money is going to your local school district. There has got to be a better way to fund education in the state of Illinois. Traditionally, the state is to fund the preponderant amount of money to fund education in the state. Well, currently, and the number can be debated, the state funds somewhere from 26 to 28%, and that's gradually happened over the years, and what's happened as a result is the school districts have needed to raise property taxes to the maximum, go out for referendums, seek additional dollars for capital improvements, and it's put more and more pressure on everybody and their property taxes. So you can't even begin to discuss how to reduce property taxes unless you talk about how do we finance our education system, our K-12 education system. The two are tied together. Not only would it provide relief to residents for high property taxes, but it also opens up the idea of a more equal way of funding our schools. Because let's face it, the school systems where there's a huge EAV and home values are high, we have beautiful school systems, and the school systems that are in the areas where there's poverty, where there's lower income, where there's less EAV in the property, they suffer. So addressing property taxes has to go hand in hand with education financing.
President Scott, go right ahead.
Well, you know, and just in terms of education funding generally, many of you may be surprised to learn that K-12 is actually financed at a swifter pace than our higher education institutions. And that is something that is on the table that has been presented to the university presidents by the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Because we have suffered in our funding. We haven't had, for the first time in almost 7 years, capital improvement money was finally released by the state on an emergency basis to the 9 public universities in the state. You know, Chicago State received money we've been operating on an alternative power source because our generator failed. We have light poles on our campus that are about to fall over for lack of repair because we haven't had any capital infusion from the state of Illinois in almost 7 years. So for the first time, some money, capital funds were released to the public universities about 2 weeks ago. And we will begin the process of making some much needed critical repairs. But generally in terms of funding, we are not funded at the rate that our K-12 institutions are. We don't really want to compete with K-12, but what we want to point out to you as citizens, that you know, while we are a public university, only about 35% of our funding actually comes from the state. That means the rest of our funding has to come from students, to and tuition and fees. And when you are working with students who are coming to the table with their own critical issues that relate to finances and funding for their education, particularly among first-time, first-generation students, I mean, that is not the best pool from which to seek tuition and fees and to support and sustain your institution. So I think that, you know, while we talk about the many things that are on the table and that should be front and center in the election, our ability to educate and deploy an educated workforce is an important element to who we are and who we are as a state. And I think that the state, while making hard decisions, has to look to what has happened to higher education.
There's a point we have not discussed that's related to higher education. We talk about, well, where are we going to raise the extra money? Who's going to pay more? What do we cut? How do we make these pieces work? But we are in a dynamic economy. So we also have to think about where do we invest the resources we have for growth. And that's an important piece, and that's often thrown around in a partisan way, but it's real. We do make decisions every day about what grows our state and what grows our economy. And when we're in this political paralysis, we don't grow very fast and we lose people. Chicago has room to almost double its population, and think of what that does for the environment. The same number of streetlights, after all, will keep twice as many people well lit. You know, we can do this. And Columbus, Ohio, one of the fastest growing cities in the middle of the country. It's now a huge engine of economic growth in Ohio. They figured that out because, let's see, they had a state capital and Ohio State University. They weren't far from each other, right? You know, we have a state capital in the center of the state. We have a pretty remarkable research university in the center of the state. We could actually grow if we thought about our infrastructure in different ways and we thought about our investments in different ways. If we think about, when I asked you, do you think this is a problem that's solvable, and nobody said no, then let's think about what we do to be a better state, right? A better state, a more competitive state, a place that gives everyone an opportunity to participate in the economy by funding folks who need a little help to go to college, right? If we start doing things like that and we address by making tough decisions on spending and tough decisions on revenue, we can grow. And then the problem becomes a whole lot less hard, won't take all of 50 years.
Mark Vaughn, Mark had a question, if he wouldn't mind stepping up. And while he's doing that, I'm just gonna remind everyone, we are at the Union League Club in Chicago. It's the last of our Illinois Issues Seeking Solutions Forum for election 2018. And we appreciate everybody tuning in tonight, and also those of you who've come out the previous events as well. Mark, go right ahead with your question.
You've got it. And I don't have it memorized, but referring to the chart over on the panelists' left, that the knee-jerk answer is, well, we'll just raise taxes. Just raise taxes, we'll tax retirement income, whatever, to somehow pump prime the economic engine. The problem is, if you look, 49% have considered leaving the state, 74% know of someone that has left the state. So when you make a knee-jerk reaction of just simply raising taxes, the wealthy that provide the engine, provide the jobs, provide the economy, they flee. They go to a low tax cost state like Tennessee or Florida. And so then the remaining populace that's here face even higher taxes, because the ones that, quote unquote, could afford graduated taxes, could afford taxes on retirement income, simply flee.
And before I let the panel weigh in on that, let me point out to those who are listening that the charts he was referring to are from the AARP survey that's been released. Anyone on the panel want to address that as far as Illinois being a high-tax state compared to being a low-tax state? Does that put us at a disadvantage?
Well, let me get at it this way. So it is cause for alarm, the cause that as our numbers shrink, so does shrink our tax base. And the strategies that we need to grow include, you know, you've heard us talk a fair amount about changing, if not raising, the tax structure and cost reductions, but pro-growth strategies have to be part of the solution as well. in this. There is indeed, you know, great cause for alarm, and I will just keep coming back to, you know, those of us in the room may have some ideas as to how to combine all these things to get the state on better fiscal footing, but, you know, for AARP, the point in this survey is not just to put out a survey and raise alarms, but it is to it is part of our multi-year Enough is Enough campaign, which is designed to mobilize and educate voters throughout the state to demand that our elected officials, our business leaders, you know, we actually talk a lot about what government needs to do, but really to demand that everyone mobilize, but that our members and our voters throughout the state really demand of our leadership that they actually start taking up, you know, that they take up this cause of solving the state's fiscal problems. And it includes all of those things. You know, again, the purpose of this survey isn't just to alarm, but it's certainly to reflect the anger and to mobilize voters. All of you, you know, have the opportunity to hold your elected officials accountable. For those of you who are on the airwaves, say the same thing. These should be reasons for you to get angry, get worried, but then mobilize. You know, AARP has a number of vehicles through which you can get involved. It's our website here at the event here. We have a table to sign up, but these are all reasons to, you know, as Edwin has pointed out, this is also a state with tremendous assets. And if we just mobilize and demand that our leaders mobilize and start moving forward with economic development, with changing our tax structure, if that's what it takes, you know, to just mobilize and start actually putting these issues and working them through and getting our state back on sound fiscal footing.
Let me follow up on something Rosanna mentioned about people getting together and letting their feelings be known. I'm sure there are a lot of people here and listening who may feel as though it doesn't matter what I do. They're not going to listen to me. I don't, you know, no matter how much myself and other friends of mine get together, they're not going to listen. AJ Wilhelmi, being a former lawmaker, your thoughts on that. Do lawmakers, do people in power listen to everyday citizens?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think the answer is yes. I know it was for me, and I know the mayor can reflect on that. And Edwin, it sounds like you were an elected official for some time as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the in my opinion, when you run for office, right, that's a choice. You put your name on the ballot, and if you're successful, now you have that office, and you have a duty and a responsibility to truly listen. That doesn't mean you can always please, you can't please everyone all the time, but you do have an obligation to listen. And through that dialogue that I had for 7 years, and the mayor can reflect on his experience, good ideas and good solutions came forward. But most importantly, when I went to Springfield to cast a vote, I reflected on the conversations, the dialogues, and the feedback I received from my constituents, the 212,000 people that I had the honor to serve. And that really is important. I know we all can get down, we can get pessimistic at times, but at the end of the day, when you're an elected official, and those elected officials that take their job seriously and are responsible elected officials, and we're fortunate to have many, many elected officials in Springfield and throughout the state that take their jobs very seriously, they do want to hear from you. They do care what you have to say. They're not always going to be able to agree with you every time on every issue. But that dialogue and that engagement, as you just heard, very, very important.
I have to let the mayor weigh in on that as well, I'm sure.
Well, I think AJ did a great job of covering it. But let me tell you live here, I've been serving for 10 years as mayor. When our council room gets filled with people, it definitely has an impact. We have folks come in for either a specific issue, whether it's a development issue or some kind of policy change that we are having. The seven of us on our council, our mayor and six trustees, we're all good folks. We're there to serve the community. We want to do the right thing. But those are our ideas that we come up with. And when we get feedback from the residents, it's amazing sometimes to see that, hey, well, yes, we did have a good idea, but those folks who are our bosses that put us here, that's not what they want. They've got different ideas. And if it's something controversial, if the board meeting, the boardroom is empty, it's not controversial. That's how we're human up at the dais. At the dais, that's what we're looking at. That's what the feedback is. If the boardroom is packed and there's a tone coming from the residents, it most definitely has an impact. Letters work to your To your elected officials, I'll give you a hint. Don't use a form letter. Write it in your own words and keep sending it to them. Those things work.
Hey,
most definitely.
I want to go back where I began before. We have a bit of a democracy problem. And I just challenge every one of you, when you hear your neighbors say it doesn't matter, just tell them to look at a map of the world. Tell them to get to understand how governments work around the world. If you want to give up on this experiment in American democracy, just check out and say it doesn't matter. You'll get some strong man who'll tell you what to do. There'll be winners. There'll be losers. You'll likely be a loser. Hint. That's how it works all over the world. Elected officials are your neighbors, for gosh sakes, in many cases. They have, 12 million people in Illinois. It's a lot of people. There's diverse points of view. People have different ideas about what's right and wrong. But if we decide we're in it together, it's hard work, a democracy. You know, Ben Franklin said right outside, I'm giving you a republic if you can keep it. Well, we're challenged to keep it. But as we heard at the very beginning, this place was built, you know, in part on an effort to keep a democracy that was at the time, should it be of the people, by the people, for the people, right? They built this room because of that. Okay, let's build our state because of that. If we do it, these are just not that hard. Everybody's got to give a little. It's a complicated technical problem, very complicated. Let's hold our officials accountable for this and hold our neighbors accountable for not checking out.
I just want to add one thing. You know, as a public institution that sits in an urban area, we view ourselves as being sort of a catalyst for engagement and a catalyst for thought. And that is why we are sponsoring a civics lesson for our high school students on the topic of why vote. And so in about a week, we will have hundreds of high school students who will come on our campus, and they will talk and engage in a nonpartisan conversation about the importance of voting. And to your point about elected officials and engaging in an audience with them, one of the things I think is important for my administration is to really engage with our elected officials who support the work of Chicago State University in our home district. So that means that I have had meetings and conversations with people from our state legislature who have come to me to ask about what my vision is for Chicago State. Not in a way that's partisan, but in a way that is productive. What do you need? How can we support you? And here's how to advocate for the students and from the university and from the, and your needs from the state legislature. So what I can say is, in my experience, our state legislature has been engaged and supportive and interested in what is going on at this institution. And what we view ourselves as an opportunity for economic growth in the neighborhood in which we sit. Because if you look at every university has to publish a fact book, how many students that do you admit? And from that, you will also learn where did the students go who you admitted who chose not to come to Chicago State. And we have looked at that as an issue of what's happened in the last 3 to 4 years and our enrollment has declined. Those students have gone nowhere because of a lack of a budget and which meant a lack of opportunity. So those students that we were at a time educating are now going nowhere. And I think that if our legislature focuses on that and focuses on opportunity, not only for the wealthiest of schools, but the schools who are really going to be driving economic value and economic opportunity, then they will look at the reinvestment that's needed for higher education.
We have less than 10 minutes left, and since this is our final forum of the year here going around the state, I did want to ask our panel to weigh in. If you could keep your responses here to about a minute or so, I'd like for you to give advice. It doesn't have to be specific policy, but advice for whoever becomes the next governor. And whichever one of you would like to start, and we'll continue down the line. What would be some advice you'd give that person?
Well,
Mr. Eisenbrough.
I have a role to play in this conversation. And so my advice is come sit with reporters, talk to the people of the state, forthrightly answer questions, go do public forums and let them be widely shared across the state so that we can engage our citizens in solving this problem. Without it, you're on your own and be very tough.
Okay. Mayor Mancini?
I would say drop the ideology. Start talking to us like we're smart, because we are. I think the people in Illinois are pretty smart. Drop the ideology. Start talking to people on a level that brings solutions. I think that would be the biggest piece of advice I'd give to both of our candidates.
You know, I think our citizens are weary with the divide. I think people are looking for compromise. I mean, that is what democracy is about, and that is what democracy is encouraged to be about, and that is compromise. People, I mean, no one thinks in a democratic state that you will always have your way on every issue, and I think people in the state are ready for compromise. As someone said earlier, this, you know, typically Illinois is a moderate state. There's no red, there's no blue. It's really a state that kind of leans toward the center. And I think that what I would encourage the next governor to do is really compromise, because a lack of compromise has in part led to where we are right now.
So along the same vein, you know, I'm a lawyer by training, and I practiced law for a number of years, and I've dealt with lawyers my entire life, and I have always said and always believed that the best of lawyers are not the ones who tell you what you can't do, not the ones who tell you what to do, but the ones who are good problem solvers. And I would ask this governor and every elected official, as you know, we sit down, who, you know, we'll all assume are well-meaning and want to do the right thing, be a problem solver. Sit with others who are, you know, take the party affiliations off, be a problem solver. You can get a whole lot done when you approach stuff that way.
Great comments. I would say three things. Listen to the people. We talked about that. Really engage with the constituents. Shoot straight, recognize the challenges, be honest about them, and then third, as you just heard, and I think very effectively, find common ground, because these challenges are significant, but there are solutions if we work together, if our elected officials work together. And so I think, you know, from an optimistic perspective, we've seen when that's worked. The budget that was just passed in May, we had a huge issue for the hospital community related to a Medicaid program we call the assessment program, the hospital assessment program, where bipartisan efforts were really sincere, and we got to good outcomes. So I want to end on an optimistic note that it is possible. We've seen two examples, many more, in the last several months, and we certainly need that to continue.
I'm going to stick with that. We do have somebody, if you want to step to the microphone, we can try to get your question real quick. Why doesn't that happen more often, Mr. Wilhelmy? You were a state senator. Why don't they work together more?
Well, it's interesting. A couple different views. One, it happens more than you know, because frankly, there are occasions where that work's taking place, and it's not something that's discussed in the public domain. And sometimes, you know, the media has a lot to cover, and they don't have a chance to cover every situation. An example where there is true bipartisanship. So it does happen more than you know. But second, we can't be naive either, right? Politics has always played a role in this country since Ben Franklin and our founders. It's always gonna play a role. But that doesn't mean we're gonna always have gridlock or we're always going to have impasse. There are many examples of bipartisanship that bipartisanship has driven results and solutions and compromise.
Okay, before we run out of time, we're running close, so if you can make a quick comment or statement.
Is this all right?
Sure.
Okay, I have what looks like a great solution to our state's budget crisis problem, one that wouldn't affect any of us, and that is, and it's recommended by three winners of the Nobel Prize in Economic Science and also 200 other economists and a financial transaction analyst, and they claim it wouldn't work, but why wouldn't we want to try it with all those authoritative people praising it? Why wouldn't we do it just because someone says they'll move out of the town? And I'm talking about the financial transaction exchanges on LaSalle Street. A small tax on every financial transaction there would raise us up to maybe $12 billion a year. I would recommend, by the way, if you want more on good solutions to our problems that wouldn't cost us so much money.
Okay, we're gonna have to cut you. Let me see if somebody can respond to that, okay? And
okay.
Before we run out of time, anybody that wants to weigh in on that, that has come up before. I've heard that
sure,
idea.
Sure, I can respond to it.
In just about 30 seconds.
I think it's certainly a good idea. There's a large menu of opportunities to create new revenues. That is definitely one of them. There's many, many others. There's service taxes. There's other ways to kind of spread that tax base out, as you suggest. That's certainly one of them that's feasible. I don't think it's the only one, but it's one of them.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there for tonight. Thanks for that question, though. Appreciate it. I do want to thank our panel tonight. We have heard from Joseph Mancino. He's the mayor of the Village of Hawthorne Woods and chair of the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. Also, A.J. Wilhelmy, president and CEO of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. We heard from Zee Scott, president of Chicago State University. Rosanna Marquez, who is the state president for AARP. And Edwin Eisendrath, CEO of the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks for all of you tonight taking the time. If you gave them all a hand, please. As I mentioned, this is our forums, our election 2018 Seeking Solution forums. This is our 11th one. We've been going around the state. We want to thank everybody who's participated in those. And thanks for everybody who has come out tonight and those who listened on air. I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois, and also want to thank Mike and Mark with the Office of Electronic Media at the University of Illinois Springfield with the audio and visual work as well. Support for our series provided by AARP. Have a good night.